I love origin stories.
Yeah.
And I feel like every great man and woman that I've had the chance to meet or read about, they've all had a pretty powerful origin story. And I kind of have seen this, and I'm sure you've seen it too, and everyone that you've talked to. It's like the origin story of somebody is deeply connected to what they're doing today. So like, I'm curious, everything that you do today for young men around the world, what is it about your origin story that led you to that point?
So I was born in poverty in Pakistan, and we didn't have enough money to even be able to afford enough food for the family. So my parents, my siblings actually tell this story that my parents used to go hungry to feed us, and that it still wasn't enough because I didn't develop properly. I basically didn't have enough nutrients to develop like my bones properly. So I had rickets and I was malnourished, and I just grew in odd ways that I eventually needed like physiotherapy for. And eventually my father started to work super, super hard, got better job after better job. And by the time I was 3 years old, he was kind of like a manager at a paper mill plant, and he was able to provide. Then we moved to better house, to better house, to better house. And eventually we were in a really lovely part of Lahore, Pakistan, with a mansion and servants. And we moved to the UK, 3 years old, 4 years old, suffered intense racism and, you know, being the only one who's different, not really having that consistent brotherhood, going through so much like traumatic abuse at home and then getting bullied at school. I think why I'm here today doing the work that I do for young men is because I've been that Jeffrey. I've been like the complete loser who basically has no friends, who has friends who are the kind of friends who actually are racist and insulting and disrespectful, the kind of friends who would laugh about not inviting me to something they all did yesterday. And so they weren't real friends, but they were the only friends that I had. And since my dad was quite abusive, I didn't spend much time with him, which meant that I was a lot closer to my mother, which I didn't realize was basically developing me to be a complete pussy and not have masculine traits. I'd get like a little cut, and my mother would, you know, like mother me for it. And she'd get really dramatic and tell me never to ride my bike that fast again. And that was the kind of character that I started to build up, because I didn't have like daddy's encouragement saying, whoa, look how fast you went.
Go faster next time.
I didn't have that. And so I was always so scared of injury, of losing my possessions, of, I don't know, like relationships, everything. I just had so much fear and anxiety for most of life. And it was only when I became more of an adult and I started to question, you know, what it means to become a man, because I didn't like the man that I was at the time, who was a pussy, loser, couldn't attract women, couldn't be around other men, had no self-esteem, low levels of pride, confidence, success. I started to learn that the way that I was living was just completely wrong. If you wanted to feel like masculine and strong and proud of yourself, you have to delay gratification. You have to be more stoic. You have to overcome your emotions. You have to work super hard even when you don't feel like it. So it's been a tough journey, but I think how it relates to the start is that I was always in that bottom position of like the social hierarchy. It's as low down as you can be. I was a malnourished little Pakistani boy.
Right.
And I feel like that's given me a lot of drive to work super hard, become successful.
Yeah. So, I mean, you think about Spider-Man, right? Peter Parker. I know you're not a nerd, right? I was a nerd. Super nerdy, super geeky, bullied at school. And then the spider bites him and he turns into the superhero, right? Batman, slightly different, watches both of his parents get shot dead. And that was the start of his story. What was the transition moment for you that everything started to change?
Wow, that's an excellent question. One of my favorite authors' name is MJ DeMarco, and he has a book which is titled The Millionaire Fastlane. And inside of it, he says you need to experience your FTE, your fuck this event, a moment that's so traumatic and emotional and makes you so fed up that you're willing to sacrifice everything to change. And my FTE, the spider bites, was on a particular night after I just finished working full time. So I was working in this like customer service complaints department. It was a full-time job. I already had a psychology degree, but it was the best only job that I was really getting. You know, I applied for tons of jobs, went to a bunch of interviews. This was the only one that I got accepted for. And I was enlisted into the Royal Air Force. I was halfway through the application process. I had a shaved head. I was training every day. 5 a.m. wake up, go to the gym, go upstairs to start work, eat like my little chicken sandwich in the middle of the shift so that, you know, it's like more efficient. So that way for my lunch hour, I could go back to the gym. I was that kind of guy. I was working next to people who were obese. So I didn't fit in at all. I wanted to be an entrepreneur. I wanted to be this hardworking military style guy. I go home and I'd smoke weed every single night while sitting next to my girlfriend who I didn't trust and she didn't trust me. And so it was this one particular day where I had worked all day. I finished work and I'm wearing dress shoes kind of like this where I'm speed walking to where the tram's going to be. And I'm keep checking the time because the tram comes in a few minutes. It comes in like 14 minutes after I finish work, but it takes about 16 minutes to walk there, even if you're fast as well. So at some little moments, I do a little bit of a jog when there's no cars around to judge me. I'm like speed walking. I've got shin splints and everything. It's horrible. And I see the tram already at the stop. And it's like, I either sprint for it right now and feel kind of like a loser who's there, or I just kind of go slowly and I decide to go slowly. And I'm, you know, hoping for whatever reason it's been delayed or whatever, but it's not. And as it goes off, like I'm actually really, really upset. The next tram comes in 12 minutes. So it's not even that bad. But it really hurts me because I feel like I have no time for myself. I'm working full time for a company I don't care about. I make £64 a day and I'm just exhausted. And I know that when I do get home, I already have limited time to like enjoy myself. All I'm going to do is smoke weed, get paranoid thoughts, sit next to a girl that I don't even trust, eat shit food that's ruining my physique, and then go to sleep deprived to repeat it again tomorrow.
Just a movie version of your life. You would walk. Breathe.
Yeah.
And you would step onto it, but that's not how it works.
In real life, I was stepping over the syringes that like homeless crackheads had been leaving on the floor and stuff. It was horrible, bro. It was, I can't even describe like how bad that moment was. But I'm on the tram and I have PTSD from like a few years before that because some racist guys attacked me and blamed me for the Manchester bombing. So on the tram, I'm sweating, I'm anxious, I'm always looking out for threats and everything. And, you know, people who are being loud almost trigger me into a state of fight or flight. So it's not even a comfortable moment going home either. And once I got to my tram stop, there's two paths you can take. One of them is lit up and the other one is just pitch black. And it's interesting that that's the path that I would take. And anyone who would take this path to go towards like my apartment building, they'd always have their flashlight on their phones just so you could see the floor and everything. But on this night and on many nights, actually, I just turn the flashlight off. And I just walk through the darkness towards my apartment building, just calculating like which apartment is mine, like counting up the numbers, okay, third floor, this one right there, kind of like looking in, expecting my girl to be getting fucked right now. That's how bad my mental health was. And I start crying. And I'm used to it. This is my little cry spot. I'm crying because I feel like I've got more in my life, but it's just not happening. I haven't spoke to my family for months by now. I had a massive argument with them. I moved back here to Manchester and I blocked them from everything. I'm trying to figure out like what to even do with my life. Everyone told me just go to university. But I did that. This is life now. Like this is people's reality. They just work shit jobs that they don't like so that they can have weekends off. But the weekends are needed to recover and do chores, which you didn't get to do for the week. The girl in my work said to a massive, with a smile on her face, she said, oh, but don't worry, you know, this year for Christmas, we get 3 days off. And she said that as if it was like an exciting thing that last time, you know, it was worse than that. And I was quite new to this, like working full time thing. So it hit me because I was like, you know, I didn't understand, like for Christmas, you get 2 weeks off as, you know, it's like school.
Yeah,
right?
Yeah.
I was two months
off for summer.
I was still expecting like time off for summer and everything, like a half term and everything. You don't have that when you work full time, right? I was like, I couldn't believe that this was people's reality. And I know I sound privileged as fuck, but like I was quite sheltered from like the realities of most people because I was always living in like my own world, in the virtual world of video games. And so, yeah, this was my FTE. I basically thought to myself, I'll basically kill myself if I stay like this. I was incredibly depressed. I used to have like these paranoid thoughts where I used to think that, you know, I was ashamed to my family and that there's no point in me being alive right now. All I was doing was consuming. I wasn't helping anyone. I was addicted to weed and I would smoke every single night, even though every single time I would smoke, I would get like paranoid, anxious thoughts. So the only free time that I had in the day, I spent with intense anxiety. I had genuinely nothing to live for. And so even though I had nothing to live for, I also had nothing to lose.
Sure.
So that's when I decided to get into entrepreneurship.
I think addiction is really, really interesting. Because, I mean, I like Gabor Mate's definition of addiction, which is like short-term pleasure, negative long-term consequences, inability to give it up. And yes, we can become addicted to the actual thing, but I think you can kind of become addicted to being addicted, where it's like it's safe to live inside this little black, meaningless little hole. And for you to get out of that requires a lot of courage.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, it's easier to stay in that position. Because it's very painful. It's very difficult, but it's also easy to stay because you don't have to take much responsibility. Yeah. It's oddly comfortable, even though it's the most uncomfortable position to be in.
But that's why you're still smoking weed, even though you know what it's causing you in terms of your paranoia and it.
Yeah.
So what were your first steps? How did you start to make the climb?
So I'd already tried like a business at this point. I used to flip on eBay. So I'd buy clothes and resell them for like £10 profit. So I already had a little bit of entrepreneurship experience, but it wasn't very scalable. It wasn't the thing I really wanted to do. You know, I was considering, do I go into the military? Because that's got like, you know, the lifestyle really suits me. I like to wake up at 5 a.m. and train. I wanted to be around guys and stuff. But I started to see this new trend of making money online. So this is, you know, 2019, yeah. So it was still relatively like a new thing back then. It was a bit of a strange concept to be making money online, being like a digital nomad.
It's like one of those fake ads that used to pop up. Do you want to work from home and make £200 a day?
That was literally the space back then. So it was like untrustworthy people making videos about like, oh yeah, they travel the world and get paid for it and whatever. And although there was a disbelief, I did kind of pursue it now. And I was thinking, okay, well, I'm going to do this now. So I tried dropshipping. I tried like freelancing work. I wanted to become like a video editor, a animator. I tried like becoming a rapper. I was just trying a bunch of different things to just see what stuck. I was willing to basically do whatever it took. So I was trying loads of different things.
Do you still have the old mixtapes?
They're on my old phone, yeah.
Bro, that's like premium content. That's the high ticket.
Yeah, it was a high ticket. Can't make a rap song. It's just me doing my own ad libs.
That's precious content right there.
Yeah. So the first steps was I was just doing a lot of research and you know learning online and watching these videos where people were explaining this model and this one. And I was just jumping around from business model to business model, which I'm sure so many people will relate to. And in the end, basically, I went a little bit harder in dropshipping than anything else and started making like a few hundred a month in dropshipping. I did it slightly different from everyone else where I didn't just sell shitty products from China. I actually found the guys who had the same products, but in the UK, and I dropshipped them to other people in the UK. And I used like Instagram ads instead of Facebook because Facebook kept on banning me. And so it was a lot less passive than dropshipping usually is. Everything was manual. I had to manually place orders, but I started to make like a few hundred a month from it. So it was something. And that really the big catalyst was this one particular day when I had a new job. I was working in a homeless shelter. It was like 3 or 4 a.m. And I was working on this dropshipping site, but I also had tasks for my YouTube channel. And I was also like learning how to code. You know, I was trying so many different things. And I actually was just about reading a book, which was The Subtle Art of Not Giving a Fuck by Mark Manson. And in it, he writes that basically you'll always be experiencing problems and you'll always be suffering. The point of life is not to have a tensionless life, but rather to choose the thing that you actually want to suffer for. What problems do you want to solve? Right. And it was a complete paradigm like shift for me because I was like, oh yeah, like you're always going to have to solve problems. What problems would I want to solve?
And you had that desire, you know, you're like, suffering was okay for you. You're like, I want to join the military.
Yeah.
I want to train hard. So like in the masculine soul, like there is a desire to do something difficult, you know, to slay that dragon, to choose your suffering. Like I love Peterson's kind of work on that. So at what point did you feel like you really, really find, yes, this is the thing that I want to suffer for?
I started to break it down one by one. And I was thinking, okay, drop shipping. What are the problems involved? I'm selling some shit product to customers who are going to be pissed off because it's going to take 30 days to arrive in some like crappy website that I'm not going to be proud of, just whipped up quickly. And the problems I have to deal with is like customers being angry at me. I don't even like what I'm doing. I would never do something like this if I wasn't going to make money from it. I'm just being the weird middleman who's getting a cut of the profits without giving real value. And I thought, okay, you know what? That's not how I want to spend my life. Then I thought about coding. And the first thing I thought was like, I didn't want to be a nerd with like bad posture all my life. Because I'll preface all this actually by saying that the most valuable thing that I had during this time, which I really hope that anyone watching this has, is I had the belief that no matter what I chose, I could become successful in. That's why I was trying these odd things like becoming a rapper. Because I still have the belief, it sounds silly, but it's like, I have the belief right now that no matter what it is, if I put 10 hours a day into it for 10 years, I'll get successful. I won't be the best ever, fine, but I'll get into the top 1% of anything I attempt. It doesn't matter what it is. And a lot of people don't actually believe that. And that's the problem. It's like they feel like there's genetics involved or whatever. Even with basketball, let's say I'm 6'1", so I'm fairly tall for the average population, but not for basketballers. Give me 10 years and 10 hours of practice a day. And I could like, I might not be in the NBA top, you know, the top 0-0, but I could make a full-time living from it, right? And everyone should have that belief. So then I was thinking about becoming a rapper and I thought, yeah, well, you know, if I put in 10 years into this, I could easily become like one of like the top 1,000 rappers of all time, for example. And I thought about the problems and I knew for a fact, like, quite frankly, I thought, okay, I'm a degenerate and I know for a fact that level of like status and fame and women throw themselves at me, I knew for a fact that that would cause a lot of problems. So that was one. I had the awareness to think like, I'd get what I want, which is like love and attraction and everything, but I know for a fact that that's dangerous. Then I thought about just the degenerate lifestyle that comes with that, the possibility of getting robbed because you're in this space and everything. And it's also kind of just cringe trying to become a rapper and everything. So
yeah, being a rapper is only really cool
if you're at the top.
At the very
that's
end
it.
Of the journey.
That's it, yeah. For everything else, it's like, oh, you're a hard working young man and stuff, fine. But like when you're a rapper, you have a few thousand subscribers.
You're
SoundCloud mixtape or something. Like it's just lame. But I thought the same thing with like animation and the other random things I was trying, writing ebooks. And then I thought about YouTube. And at the very moment that I was thinking about the problems with YouTube, I actually saw the same thing that kept on happening every night in this homeless shelter, where the youngest guy would leave his room. So these are all homeless guys, right? In the shelter, and I've got like CCTV here. He'd leave his room and I knew what he was about to do. He's like almost like running through the house, banging on every door. So he bangs on the ones next to him, goes down the stairs, bangs on every single one. By the time he gets out of the front door, out onto the street, almost everyone has left their rooms and came and joined him at the front of the house. There's about 15 homeless guys who have nothing to lose, stood outside smoking cigarettes, whatever. And then I just see them go off into the darkness of the night. And I used to see this every night. And I used to just think like, how fucking scary would it be if you were walking past them with your girl or something, or if you lived around this area? I know what they're about to do. Within 1 or 2 hours, they come back and they don't come back empty handed. They come back. One of them's holding one bike here, one bike here. One of them's holding a fucking huge like desktop PC or something, big like computer monitor. They go to like the shooting houses or buildings nearby and just rob as much as they can. It was so bad that we literally had to tell them to like not bring the bikes inside because there was no space in the hallways and everything. And around this time, one of the guys, not the main guy, but one of the guys, he's not with them. He was sat in the back of the house by himself, like outside, just kind of like stood there by himself. And I thought about what I wanted to suffer for. And I thought about these young men. I thought about like how left behind most modern men have. How little guidance that they have, how little support that they have. I thought about the problems of YouTube, that I'd have to deal with hate comments. Weirdly, I thought very specifically about the problem of like my editing software crashing. And I thought, you know what? Like, that's actually a problem that I'd take. Okay, I have to go research some technical stuff. I have to fortify my mind against negative comments. And I actually thought to myself, you know what? Those are actually problems that I'd be willing to take. And it's interesting because literally just before we press record, I was even telling you like, that's, you know, I'm getting hate online and stuff. Oh, it's like someone said this. It's still a problem that I have to go through. It's not easy. It never becomes easy. But it's interesting that exactly what I anticipated became the problem that I'm dealing with still today. And I have zero regrets whatsoever.
Yeah, man. So you go off on this incredible journey. You start YouTube, you put in the first 100, 200, 300 videos, you grow it, And then it's probably only like relatively recently into the journey. You know, like the exponential graph where it's like you're just here for so long and you're uploading and you're editing and the software's crashing and it's crashing and you're getting angry, you're getting all this hate, and then the exponential comes.
That's when the hate really comes. There's no one in those days before you build success, no one's hating on you. Everyone likes you. It's the moment you surpass these motherfuckers, that's when they're trying to bring you back down.
Sure. So you experience a lot of success on YouTube. You find your tribe, like you find your voice. You find that like you connect with millions and millions of young men around the world who have felt exactly what you've just described. Like the people who've listened to this, I don't know how long it is, 20 minutes or whatever, they feel in their core, in their bones, this is my lived experience. This is how I feel. And okay, maybe I don't have the exact family scenario, but I can resonate so clearly with what Hamza's saying here. So you find your tribe. There's a lot of YouTubers who don't make any money. So how are you able to run a successful business that provides for you and your family and allows you to do this for the long run in a way that also serves that tribe of young men who typically aren't going to buy massive high-ticket programs, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera?
So there's two stages. Stage one is building the audience. Stage two is monetizing. So most people still need to focus on stage one. You go through stage one by posting good advice to social media. This is if you want to be like an educating style of creator instead of an entertainer. So you obsess over your younger self and what problems they had. So I used to watch a lot of porn. I used to play video games. I used to eat junk food. I used to be a little pussy in social situations and people used to disrespect me and I was, you know, getting walked over. I struggled with girls, all these random problems, right? You think about those in very good detail and you think about how you've made progress from them, what exactly you did and the specific moments that, you know, you hit some kind of milestone. And you start making content where you break that down and you teach those lessons, you tell the stories, you give advice. What can happen with a piece of content is like you go through, let's say, heartbreak and it takes you 2 months to recover. You tell that story of those 2 months and the advice in a 30-minute video. There'll be some people who watch that 30-minute video and you'll speed their two-month heartbreak into 2 weeks. You've just saved them a month and a half of their entire lives. That's when you know you're making like life-changing content where you can distill like months or years of pain into a lesson that saves someone half that time. That's how you grow the audience. And so you do that. Let's say you start getting thousands of subscribers. You're on 5K, 10K. And now you want to make money because the money you make just from these platforms is not much at all. Like it's, you know, for the average income, it's still very high. But in terms of like getting rich, you're not going to get rich just from AdSense, TikTok creator fund, whatever. It's still sizable, I guess. But you build the audience. And then when it's time to monetize, basically, you need to just think of something that you can sell to the same audience. And these are two different steps. People try and do both steps at the same time. It's learning to like drive whilst also learning to tie your shoelaces at the same time. It's like just do them once in the order, right? So once you've got the audience, which I'd suggest at least a few thousand followers, and you really want to start making money and you want to create some kind of product and you've got the bandwidth for it, that's when you need to decide something that basically is going to help your people get to their goals faster. So you already need to have a really good awareness of what your people's goals are. You should know this because they're your people. And if you don't know, just like go on a call with 100 of them and find out. It takes a lot of time, but this is what I used to do. I used to just go on a one-to-one call with my people like every single day. So I have a very good awareness and understanding of the kind of people they are. And you start realizing, okay, the most common goals I hear is this and this and this. This is the limiting beliefs they have. This is the stories they tell themselves. This is why they're stuck in this situation. This is how much money these guys have to spend. And you learn a lot about your audience when you just spend a lot of time with them and ask them these questions. And then just release that product for sale and you just mention it inside of your videos, your content. So for me, what I realized was the most common goals that my audience had was getting better with girls, making money, and then also like fitness related things. So I tried loads of things. I made an online course in 2021 on how to build an aesthetic body but no one back then was talking about like attracting girls with a good physique. Every guy just lied to themselves and said like they were just training for themselves. I was the first guy to come onto YouTube and say like, no, I literally go to the gym to get girls. You can find this side if you want, but like, I'm just telling you the truth. Turns out hundreds of thousands of other guys actually were doing the same thing. Yeah. So I made an online course, here's like the specific weird steps on how to build it and a physique that attracts girls. Here's the exact kind of pictures that get you more matches on Tinder. Here's how to like literally pose. Here's how to like clench your teeth in a way that makes your jawline, like weird steps that people online didn't really talk about. And I released that for $197. And from that point in June 2021, I've never been under $10,000. So instantly that bumped me over 10K. Then I made other courses, but I never felt so, I don't know. I never felt like I had so much conviction with selling these courses because I never would have bought one for hundreds of dollars. It's an interesting thing. You can release a course for hundreds of dollars. And when you've got hundreds or thousands of people who are going onto the sales page, some of them will buy it. So at this point, I was getting like a sale of this course like every day, like two times a day. Sometimes I was waking up and I sold three or four overnight. I made some more courses, made them even more expensive, remastered the aesthetic body course and made it $497. And it got so, like I recorded like an extra 50 videos and tutorials and everything. And this took me to around 20 to 30,000. But I still never had the conviction that I wanted as an entrepreneur, like for my product really to think that it's an amazing...
13-year-old Hamza could never have touched it.
Exactly. Yeah. I wouldn't have found it valuable because even me, myself, I would have just said like, oh, well, you know, all the information's out there for free. Yeah. And I'd done coaching where I hop on a call with people and give them advice. And I kind of like that, but you know, everything was kind of spread out. And I also had a free Discord server. So I had community courses and calls. It took me a while to eventually come across school. It was when Andrew Kirby spoke to me once and he saw my sales page for my newest like YouTube course. And he told me that I could be making a lot more money using school. And he was so enthusiastic. And I took one look at school where basically it combined courses, coaching and community, the three things that I had already into one thing. And I just straight away, it's like my brain just loved that. I was like, oh, like then I'd only have to mention one thing from now on. Right now, it's like this weird thing where I've got to say, okay, I've got these courses, but you can also do a call with me. And, you know, this is my community and this and this. It was like, I'll just have one thing, which merges all of them together. So when I made my first version of Adonis Academy, I released it and overnight we made 15,000. And that was just the first version. It was almost like a beta test. If people liked it and stuff, then I remade a new version, which was Adonis School, which had a higher price point. Released that, 150 people bought it, and I made 75K in one day. And since that point, in April 2023, I've not made under $100,000 every single month. It's like 220 now.
Phenomenal.
Thank you.
Jack, mate, like I'm delighted for you. Congrats.
Thank you for saying that, brother.
And it's a series of like, I mean, we've just heard the series, we've heard the journey. Like it's a lot of hard work goes into that. And you know, I think you deserve every bit of success that you've got.
Well, thank you for saying that.
And what I love about it is it's the community. You know, you're building an asset that gets more valuable every single month for every single person, for you and your team and your business, for all the community members inside. Like, it just gets better and better with every single month that goes by. Versus like, you know, if you're out there selling courses, then you got to sell another course. Then you got to sell, you know, it's like all these one-time things that are just so, you know, they're so like temporal. They just like fly away into the wind. Whereas school is giving you a chance. It's like a, I don't know what it is. It's like a net where you can capture like all this value and it just gets better for everyone inside.
School is phenomenal. People don't even realize how valuable it is. Being in the space for a few years myself and having seen like how creators who monetize kind of lose a bit of their reputation. Like I certainly lost my reputation with like my courses and everything. But with school, it's like, it's so clean. And when you've put everything together and it's like, you get to build this massive catalog of value. The biggest thing by far is that your conviction is there. So I sold all my courses for $497, $997 each. I sold my coaching for hundreds per hour. I put all of that inside of my school for $129 a month. And I now have made an extra like 15 courses that I've also put in there. Now I do masterminds, which are worth thousands of dollars or at least hundreds of dollars. That's all in there. Then you got the community. Then I'm in there with my coaches and everything. We're replying to people's questions. I do three live calls a week, which usually I would have charged hundreds for. And so it's like, it makes it very easy to just overload the value. Like, great. Like, it's just anything like, I like to work all day, right? So it's like anything more that I have in terms of bandwidth, I'll just put it back into there. So it's like, it's so easy to make it literally worth thousands. So now I feel like I have almost like a moral obligation to get people to join Because when a young man joins it for $129, it's kind of like he's just gotten $1,000 or $2,000 back. And so it's like, if you care about your people, you'd actually really want them to join because you see how much of a win it is. You see how much progress these guys are making, how important it is. They come to my meetups, which we do every single month. And like, you know, we'll take guys up the tallest mountains in the UK. We'll bring guys to like the fanciest buildings in a city. And they'll look around like, I don't do this. Many of them literally like, they don't leave their rooms. Most people don't. And so when I take like a 100 young men to Ben Nevis, like the tallest mountain in UK, and it's like, it's icy, it's, you know, it's a full on expedition. They're literally shaking and crying in tears, hugging each other, saying like, this is the greatest day of my life. I feel amazing. This is like beautiful. I just did a mastermind in London where we all dressed up and everything. And guys, you know, like saying like, I don't wear clothes like this. I didn't even know how to handshake. I had to watch like a guide before this, but I feel like a professional. And that's the most transformative part. I could be charging like a lot of money for these real life experiences, but I just add them inside just because it's like fun for me and it's even more transformative for these guys. So I think school's absolutely phenomenal, especially if you have my personality style where you enjoy working and you just like want more things to do. The problem with like courses and anything like that is that you kind of want to keep it passive. But I was always bored in business. I was making 10, 20, 30K a month. And I was just so bored. I was like, you know, YouTube doesn't take that long. I was doing the 4-hour work week thing and I was just kind of depressed. I was like, I wanted to work harder because the harder you work, the more money you make, the more of an impact you have on people. And so I always had like a huge level of lacking fulfillment for the first few years of business up until I got into school. And this is the first time I can say for being an entrepreneur over the last like 4 or 5 years that I've really been fulfilled. Like really, like I can't explain to you like how fulfilled I feel every single day.
It's
that I've got.
You're,
like
you're actually slaying the dragon, right? And you can't slay a dragon passively.
Yeah.
Can you imagine if like, I don't know what scenario, there's like a dragon, you've got like a little button that like throws a couple of rocks at it, like once per day.
It's like, that's not video games. Like your character's killing the dragon while you sit there, eat your Cheetos.
That's not what it is. And that's not how you can make money that way, but I don't think you can change a culture that way. When I look at you and what you and the team are doing, it's like you're in the culture changing business. You're in the life changing business. And you know, you mentioned earlier that you were surrounded by friends who weren't really friends. Like how many young guys around the world are experiencing that? Where this community now gives them the chance to like choose friends and choose family that actually are the people that they need.
People do not realize how valuable that is. Like everyone understands, okay, everyone's lonely. Loneliness is a huge problem. It's like one of the worst things you could have in terms of your health. It's like, I think it's the equivalent of like smoking cigarettes, right? And truthfully, you know, when people search up advice on like how to make friends, the advice I'll tell you is rubbish. So how to make friends. Videos basically. And it's like, you know, I've given the shitty advice and it's like, you know, go to the gym and speak people in there and like go to the martial arts club. I'm telling you right now, I've done that, right? I've done like any social skills advice you can hear of. Go join a club and everything. It's very unlikely that you'll go join a club and there's someone there who's got very similar interests to you. Yeah, okay, you go to martial arts and they also train martial arts. But I went there and it's like they all drink and they all go out and they all do this and I don't do this and they still play video games. You know what I mean? Even in the gym, it's you're always going to find people who've got like a little bit of an overlap, but not much.
Right.
But the beautiful thing about school communities is people will join and they overlap their interests so much with each other. Like you join my school community, any guy who joins, it's like they're a young man who wants to get more masculine, wants to make money, wants to learn how to date, is in the gym, eats 1 gram of protein per pound of body weight, has very similar views, world views to me, then therefore to each other. And I say to the boys every day, it's like, you're still not utilizing it as much as you could. You could go send like a 10 messages per day. Everyone in here is like a potential lifelong friend for you right now. I shout at them all the time, tell them like don't like fucking complain about anything. Like, oh, I'm lonely. Then they'll send 50 messages, like message everyone in our list. Imagine if you message every, we've got 1,700. Imagine if you messaged everyone in there over the next few months, you'd literally get too many friends. If you're complaining about our modern day loneliness, you join a school community and you just message the people in there and you're active, you show up to in real life events and everything. You will have too many friends. And the thing is not just the quantity, But this is the first time in history where you can actually find people who overlap your interests almost entirely. You've never been able to have that before. You go to university and yeah, sure, they study the same subject as you, but their worldviews are entirely different to yours. You go to the gym and yeah, sure, they eat protein and go to the gym, but they're also like completely leaning this way in an argument and you're not. With these online communities, you find people who are so similar to you that it's just perfect that you could literally speak for 10 hours a day. And people aren't taking advantage of it just yet. But I'm so excited when I see a young man come in and I see like, there'll be a post of like, you know, some kids just joining. He's like, oh, here's my first post. I'm going to try and make friends. I've seen the same kid 2 days later make another post. I've just met like James and we met up in real life. I'm like, that's sick. That's like, you never would have saw that a few years. You know, we've had this stranger danger shit.
3 weeks later, he's like post on top of Ben Nevis.
Post, like the best post I've always liked. There's guys who talk about making money. They watch one of my courses, they get to 100 subscribers, they make their first sale online, they build muscle. Those are all nice. My favorite post in my community is when it's literally just two guys flexing and they're like, oh, I just met like someone else from our community in real life. That it's the my favorite thing ever, because I think back to times when we were younger, there was nothing like that. You had to basically just be friends with like the dickheads from high school. They're racist as fuck. They're like, they're mean, they're disrespectful, especially when you go on your own journey as well. And like that's what friendship has been like for most people. Nowadays, school and these online communities are such a privilege to be a part of. And yeah, shout out to Sam Alvin, shout out to the school team, because it's the work that we've got here is absolutely phenomenal.
Yeah. And I mean, it's awesome. I mean, now you're here in Vegas, you won the school games, hanging out with Alex Hormozi tomorrow. Yeah. Who knows where all that's going to take you. And I have to say, like, you know, what I like about your style of leadership is that you lived it. So it's like, you got in great shape. You learned how to dress properly. It's like, you went and you built the business. So it's like, you walk the walk, you know? And I think that that's really, really important, especially for young men who've been let down by fathers or uncles or brothers or whatever. How old are you?
26.
You're 26. So you're kind of playing like you're the big brother that young men never had.
Yeah.
Have you thought about as you get older? Are you married yet? You have kids?
No.
Do you want to?
Yeah, sure.
I'm really interested to see where Hamza is in 10 years.
Mm.
Like, I'm interested to see Hamza's fatherhood court and Hamza's marriage court.
Because
your audience is going to... It's kind of like, what's it like? You know Harry Potter, right? So we grew up Harry Potter sort of era. And you see the actors grow up.
As we did.
As we did.
We left school at the same time they did. Like,
and so, you know, your community... is going to grow with you and they're going to face new challenges. So they're going to face long-term relationships, going to face parenting and all of the beauty and the pain that comes along with that. And so I think you've built an incredible platform, not just for young men, but I think you've built an incredible platform for men. Because I know you do loads of calls, you know, with other really successful, interesting people around the world. So you can just get any topic that you're interested in. Oh, maybe I'm interested in fatherhood. Who's the best person in the world on fatherhood? Let's get them into the community. Let's get them to talk to the boy. Oh, like, how do you go about thinking about like making a long-term commitment to someone? Get that person, get them in. So it's going to become even bigger as the years go by, and I'm just so excited to see it, man. I think you're doing God's work, because there's a big hole in the world for this sort of stuff. Where do you see it going? What do you want for the future? I know, like, we're very in the present as entrepreneurs, and it's especially with the school games recently, it's like month. But like, zoom out a little bit, like, let's talk 5 years, let's talk 10 years.
Yeah, certainly I'll be a father within a few years. I thought that I might even be one by now. And that relationship I was in just didn't work out. Sure. So I'm in like a season of just basically being solo and just focused entirely on entrepreneurship, which I'm really enjoying. Like, I really love business. And I will say that this is probably the first season of my life where I very ruthlessly aligned to myself and my real interest, not to the woman I'm in a relationship with, not to my audience and what they might find more interesting, but just to me selfishly, to like what I desire, which is literally, I just really enjoy business. I realized for the last few years, I've been quite inauthentic that like, I haven't spoke about business as much because, you know, it's kind of like a bad reputation. I've always been the self-improvement guy. And anytime I talked about business, people just find it like a bit scammy or whatever.
No.
But I actually really love it. I think it's the most fun game I've played by far. And
but that's a negative culture that I think the UK has.
Yeah.
In the States, much
people
more
find, yeah,
money,
people find it awesome. Yeah, yeah.
So I think, like, you know, you have a work there to do as well. Where it's like, you know, don't just go to university and get a crappy job. It's like, go build something. Do you know what I mean?
living that myself, like you said, I'm the leader who's lived, like I went to university, I got the degree, I got the crappy job, and it turned out it's crappy. It's like, whoa. Like, and even if you're not, you know, you're not trying to make like a huge amount of money, the entrepreneur who makes a few thousand a month lives a such a better life than the guy who works and makes the same amount of money. So that's like, this season is all about business for me. I'm flying around doing a bunch of events. I'm just trying to give as much value and help as possible and get as much results as possible for my guys in Adonis School. And I'm also just trying to make the most raw and authentic and honest videos that I possibly can. I've been making them recently, and it's a big change because, you know, I really exploded on YouTube. I got millions of subscribers by making like cartoon kind of videos that performed really well. And these days it's like, you know, I don't want to do that anymore. I just want to talk about like the things that are actually relevant to me right now and the things I'm interested in. Because then this way, like my authentic audience that are genuinely compatible with me will follow me along in the journey, which obviously means like my audience size will shrink because there's less people who relate to the things that I'm going through. And so really how I see this going forward is like, I'm just trying to learn the skill of just ruthless authenticity, knowing that I have such a large audience who watches every move that I go through. A lot of them are, you know, they're haters and they leave negative comments. It's what I expected, the problems of YouTube. So it's like, it's the challenge of being judged by tens of thousands of people, which before our generation was basically never a thing before. Sure. So that's a tricky hardship that I'm going through.
How do you deal with there's that side of the hardship, but then there's an element of responsibility as well. You know, and responsibility, I think it's Peterson, he talks about responsibility being a heavy weight on a man. How do you deal with that?
By making a fuck ton of mistakes, honestly. It's just every week, every month, I really, really live this life and I go out into the real world and I ruthlessly just live the life that I preach about. And there's lessons that I learned, there's mistakes. Every week, for example, there's chaotic moments, there's drama, there's this relationship issue, there's this friend, there's this business thing, there's this family, there's just so much stuff that happens when you really live a life like this. And also when you have the leverage of like social media and a business and money, my rate of growth, of change is astronomical. And so how I deal with the responsibility is like, I have to constantly remind myself, like, I'm just here to just post about my authentic lessons. And there's a lot of stuff that I'll learn, which people don't like, which, you know, people disagree with, especially like 14-year-olds. I'll teach them something about life and they'll disagree with it and think I'm a bad person for the advice I've given. And obviously it's absurd because he's fucking 14.
Yeah, right.
But I don't take the responsibility lightly. I take it very seriously. I journal about it often. I have deep conversations with family and friends about, you know, like, how can I make sure I'm being a great leader to the people who need me, to the young guys who've never had that big brother, father figure, but also how can I stay true to myself and teach the lessons that I'm genuinely going through rather than just speculating and repeating the same piece of advice over and over again. So it's a challenge, bro. I won't lie to you. It's every single day. It's like when I envisioned the pain of being a big YouTuber, I knew that, you know, this was the problems I'd have to suffer for. I kind of assumed that at some point it wouldn't be hard, but even still to this day, like if you heard me, it's like, it's still to this day, it's difficult. Having thousands of guys will comment about your life, about your partner, about your family, about your character. It's very difficult. All I can say is just like, I'm just going as hard as possible on my own self-improvement journey because that's my number one priority.
Yeah, man. We'll keep going.
Thank you.
You're a leader.
And we need you. So I appreciate you showing up the way you do. And I appreciate you making the time for this conversation today. Appreciate it.
Thank you for having me.
Gentlemen.
Loved it.
Lesson, brother.
Link to Hamza's school. If any of this has resonated with you and you really, really feel that on like a bone level, you're a young man listening to this, you've been waiting for something. Links in the description. We'll see you in there again.
Thank you.